Welcome to Divorce Talk, a podcast for people who are contemplating divorce, going through one, or would like to know everything about the divorce process. Each episode, you'll hear from Chicago divorce lawyers from Bierman LLP, one of the largest divorce and family law firms in the state of Illinois, speak on all things divorce, from child custody, divorce litigation, mediation, the collaborative process, and everything in between. Now, here are your hosts, the Bierman Divorce Lawyers.
Hi, I'm Sandra Napoli-DiArco. I'm here today with Katie Michelson and Karen Page, divorce and family law lawyers at Bierman. Today, we're speaking about co-parenting. So before we get into the subject, I'd like to turn it over to Katie and Karen so they can tell us a little bit about themselves. Katie?
Well, my name is Katie Michelson. I'm a partner here at Bierman. I've been with the firm for 14 years. I started here as a law clerk, and now I'm a partner. I have been practicing exclusively in family law for the 14 years that I've been licensed. And I grew up in Chicago in the northern suburbs in Glencoe, went to New Trier, went to the University of Michigan, and got my degree at Chicago Kent. But now I live downtown. I live with my husband and two kids in Roscoe Village. And I am an avid Michigan fan, and I enjoy being in Chicago.
Thank you. I'm Karen Page. I've been with Bierman for about 2 years now. I practiced in Los Angeles County from 1996 till 2006 when I moved back here with my ex-husband and two children. And I am divorced now. I've been divorced for about 7 years. I practice primarily in the Bannockburn office. I do cases both representing litigants and handling cases on behalf of the children, primarily as a guardian ad litem appointed by the court, primarily in Waukegan. I also serve as a parenting coordinator in Waukegan. A little bit more about me personally. I wanted to come back to the Midwest. I grew up in the Midwest. Also went to the University of Michigan. Oh. Also an avid Michigan fan. And my two children are also avid Michigan fans. I have two teenage children and live in Highland Park. So I live in Lake County and work primarily in Lake County and am a partner in the Bannockburn office.
Thank you. Okay, so co-parenting. Let's just, get down to it. What exactly is co-parenting?
Well, I mean, co-parenting is the ability for parents to make decisions together. So co-parenting is a necessity when you get divorced in Illinois. You need to determine if that's even a possibility. So parents, and they don't have to be just married, they don't have to be married, it can be unmarried parents. Part of having a court decide how decision-making is handled is whether the two parents can actually make decisions together or whether that they need to have one of them designated to make decisions. So the idea of co-parenting is somewhat of an umbrella concept which deals with, can it happen? Can co-parenting happen? And what is it for? And it's really for making decisions for their children.
So from a layperson's standpoint, typically or traditionally, isn't the parent who has custody of the children the person who's making the decisions on behalf of the children?
So the answer really is no. At this point in Illinois, the statute has changed and we no longer use the term custody. Parenting judgments now contain both two concepts, parenting responsibilities, which is four major decision-making areas, which is medical, which encompasses dental, vision care, things of that nature, school and school-related activity, enrollment, tutoring, things like IEPs, so anything that goes along with education, extracurricular activities, so things such as soccer, gymnastics, horseback riding, after-school activities, or team sports, things of that nature. And then the four major areas is religion. The other concept of parenting that would be in a parenting judgment for lay people watching, though, is the parenting schedule. And when we're talking about decision-making, it's in those four areas.
So what might be on many people's mind who may be watching or listening is, the reason I'm divorced is because I don't get along with my ex-spouse or the person that I never married for various reasons. How can I make important decisions on behalf of my child with this person that we just can't see eye to eye on anything? How does that happen? And how does that play out in a divorce?
Well, the unfortunate part is when you get divorced in Illinois, or when you have the court opining on who makes decisions for the children, that is something that the court must decide. So you don't really have a choice. There's going to be a decision by somebody, unless you can come to an agreement about how you're going to have decisions made for your children. The Illinois Marriage and Dissolution of Marriage Act is our act that governs divorce in Illinois. And there's a portion of our statute which deals directly with child-related issues, and that would be parenting time, decision-making, and the like. And what generally we as practitioners and then judges do is they will look at that statute as kind of that backdrop, and they'll be looking at factors that the statute wants us as either practitioners or judges to consider about how you divvy up those responsibilities. So we have to take a step back when we're determining how decisions are made, because you bring up a good point where, what if you don't want to make decisions with another parent? Well, somebody has to make decisions, and it's really kind of a mechanism of how do you do that, whether it's an individual, whether it's together, but that's the statute really guides that process. And it's contemplated that people don't get along, and it's contemplated that there's going to be difficulties in assigning different decision-making responsibilities to each parent. And the courts will really look at some of those factors and do a weighing game. And the weighing game really looks at the parties as parents. What we often find is people don't get along, but they often can co-parent, which is during the divorce process, just because they might not like each other or want to stay married to each other, doesn't necessarily mean that they can't make decisions for their children together.
And just to follow up on that piece, some of the most conflicted people I have worked with is both parenting coordinator and GAL. One of the things I typically start with when I talk to the parents is to remind them, first of all, they have fantastic kids. And second of all, many times they're much more aligned than they think. So for example, I was parenting coordinator for a family and their kids were wonderful kids, really grounded despite the area in which they lived, very good students, respectful. And when they met with me, they had wonderful manners. And so what I've tried to instill upon the parents over time is, even though they were extremely conflicted and they did have disagreements about some of the decision-making issues, in reality, their kids were already halfway through their minority and they were already very aligned in terms of what kind of parents they wanted to be. You know, they lived a very similar type of life. They observed the same types of traditions. So a lot of times parents, because they're so caught up in the conflict in that moment, which, you know, the litigation is kind of really just a moment in time in reality, once you kind of make them step back, to your point, then they can step back and realize, you know, all these other years we did very well together and education is important to us and the kids being involved in some sort of after school activities is important to us. Or if they have a special needs child, that they both go to the IEP meeting. So sometimes it takes reminding people that, in fact, they're much more aligned than they realize.
Karen, to take a step back, you had mentioned a parent coordinator and guardian ad litem. Can you just explain what that means?
Absolutely.
And how that plays into the divorce process, and if people who are watching need a parenting coordinator while going through the divorce, you know, how does that play into the process?
Sure. So a guardian ad litem or a child representative are the two primary types of appointments. There's a third type that's rarely used, and that is where if either the court determines in the case or both lawyers of each parent determine early on that the parents are in pretty significant disagreement over either parenting time or parenting responsibilities or both, then either one of the parties or the judge on the judge's even own motion will appoint either a child representative, which is more common in Cook County, or a guardian ad litem, which is more common in Lake County. For lay people's purposes, they really do serve the same function for the most part. There are some important legal distinctions, but for lay people's purposes, they serve the same purpose, which is sort of being an investigator essentially for the court and helping achieve a result in the kid's best interest, be that through litigation and advising the court, or be that through settlement negotiations with the parents and their attorneys. A parenting coordinator is something that the parents can only agree to appoint a parenting coordinator. It is done pursuant to court order, but it is not something that a court can impose on people. A court can certainly impose and will impose essentially a GAL or a child representative. And the parenting coordinator is different in that the parenting coordinator can only be appointed by agreement and court order. And their function is specifically delineated in terms of what they can and cannot do in the case. So unlike a guardian ad litem or a child representative, where they have typically a pretty broad scope in terms of what they're asked to do, a parenting coordinator could have a very limited scope. For example, a parenting coordinator could be appointed to simply address differences between the parents on extracurricular activities. So those are the major differences. And the parenting coordinator, another important point is typically their decisions are immediate when once made, but a parent can challenge them in court. So they're never going to be the final decision maker. The court will always be the final decision maker of both if there's a dispute.
Okay. Will the court force me to co-parent?
Well, it's a really loaded question because I think we alluded to this before, is where there's often conflict in a divorce situation, a parent can identify that both parents are good parents and can make strong decisions on behalf of their child. What the court might do is give them the tools that allow them to co-parent. So much of what Karen was talking about for tools such as an intermediary, like a parenting coordinator or a mediator, and provide a third party neutral who might be able to, either a mediator who would be a third party neutral who would not require somebody to make a decision, or a parenting coordinator, which is much more of an individual with teeth that makes those decisions, but a parent can later challenge. So generally, absent a parent really having something significantly affecting their ability to make decisions for a child or acting in a manner that endangers a child, a court is going to err on the side that each parent should have a role in a child's life. So, you know, from a perspective of, again, a litigant might have a different perspective of what their spouse or partner is like, but a court is looking at it always from the best interest of a child. So it's generally considered, absent proof otherwise, the best interest of the child that both parents have some kind of say in decisions that are made for a child. Now, like I mentioned and I alluded to before, though, that's not always how it is. You know, there's conflict between parents, and sometimes parents need that third party that helps them come to that solution. But something to hit on what Karen said before is that in addition to the fact that there's a lot of common ground between people, which doesn't make that conflict so pronounced, a lot of those decisions, especially with older children, have already been made. So people tend to forget in those four major areas that Karen referred to, if I have a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old, I already know where they're going to school. So the decision to make regarding school is really pretty much done. Those same children might be involved in extracurricular activities and have been so for years. So again, they've been historically participating. Same thing with a pediatrician. They've been seeing the same pediatrician. So generally, those, for purposes of what decision-making is looked at out of the statute of being those major decisions, those are generally already made. The conflict I see, and I'm sure that you could weigh in on this, is more of the day-to-day smaller decisions.
Absolutely.
Those smaller decisions are actually at times more contentious than the major decisions that the court has to assign from one parent to the other.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, so I mean, I can think of a couple. So for example, most kids in public or private schools these days are using iPads or Chromebooks, things of that nature, technology, right? And I've seen multiple cases where there's conflict between the parents about who forgot to charge the Chromebook or who's not making sure the child, you know, the homework got completed and submitted online. Or, for example, if a child, this is what I talk to parents a lot about living in close proximity to each other, but, you know, kid may be very forgetful. Kid may have ADHD and leave their Chromebook at school or the other parent's house. Parents need to be able to put aside their differences and be able to, A, make sure, you know, the technology that's mandatory for the child to attend school daily goes back and forth, is ready for use. And even things like, it just sounds completely granular and kind of hard to believe this is what people might be conflicted about, but are they going to go to have a hot lunch at school this week? So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that parents actually, and I talk to parents a lot about this when they come in to see me as sort of a new GAL case. Those small things actually impact younger kids far more than something like, you know, where they might go to high school many years down the line. You know, the small things about hot lunch and knowing that mom and dad can agree on that and that they don't have to have conflict on that is huge. So I think especially when you're talking about like the ages of middle school and younger, those small decisions, those day-to-day issues are huge. You know, it could be something like a kid really loves a particular outfit that they want to wear a certain week. Well, parents need to be able to make sure that they can talk about it. Like, does the outfit go back and forth?
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So what about if one of the spouses travels a lot, right? So when the couple was married, for instance, let's just say husband and wife, the wife took care of coordinating all the sports activities and the games and just making sure that the husband knew of everything so he'd be able to come to the game and so forth. Now they're divorced and wife says, you're on your own. I'm not going to do that. So as a result, the husband doesn't attend games and develops maybe a less than positive relationship with the child. And the child doesn't want to listen to the father and goes back to the mother and says, I don't want to do what dad's asking me to do when I'm with him. How is that handled in a co-parenting situation?
I mean, I think you've asked a lot of questions. It's a pretty multi-layered situation. In that kind of situation, when parties get divorced, specifically in the divorce situation, depending on whoever we represent, and I represent the mom, I represent the dad, it doesn't really matter. There's going to be a shift in responsibilities. So whereas there might have been a situation where mom, let's just use an example, mom has made all the appointments for the doctor, that the parties are going to get divorced. If I'm representing the father, I'm going to counsel my client to be more involved in that process and not just rely on mom to take on that role. So I give some accountability to my clients and say, this is going to be really important because you're going from one household to two. And that's not only information that you're entitled to, it's information that you should go after. And it's information you should be involved in. And so take ownership of that and take responsibility for that. And don't cast blame on the other parent if you're not going to take that responsibility. That's tough. And part of that, I think, is making sure that you're providing your clients with those tools to make sure that a situation that you said doesn't happen. They are involved by making sure they sign up for notices to come home from schools. They make sure they're on the contact list for doctors and they're being involved in that process. It's really difficult for me to tell my clients that I can stop whatever's being said on the other side. All I can do is say, you need to take a more active role so you can avoid problems. Such is that what you're talking about? Because decision-making and co-parenting requires two. It requires both parents being involved parents, whether you're traveling or whether you're not. And you're right. I think that marriages are a certain way. And then when you get divorced, it becomes a different way. So there's an adjustment period. And I think we've talked about tools in the event of conflict. There's a lot of tools that can be used to actually coordinate that and make that better. One popular app that we have our clients use when appropriate is like ourfamilywizard.com. And it's a way for you to do a shared calendar, to share information in terms of contact information, to keeping each other informed. But it takes both people. So it takes that kind of, even if the parties don't like each other or have a lot of distrust in one another based upon their personal dealings, there are tools that can cause them to be better parents, but just separate.
And one thing I tell parents, either if I'm representing one person or if I'm representing the kids, is I explain to them, over-communicate for a while. Meaning, you know, don't send 10 text messages a day. But for example, if you're the party that tends to take the child to the orthodontist every month and you're the one picking up the child from school more often and, you know, there's stuff happening at school, send the other parent just an email that might, the subject line might be FYI, this is what happened today. You know, at the orthodontist, they indicated there's going to be three more months of, you know, treatment instead of, you know, coming to an end. This is what's going on at school. I think the two of us should meet with the teacher. So if you over-communicate during this initial period, especially of adjustment, where maybe dad didn't do much of the heavy lifting to be stereotypical and now he's going to do it, both parties have to work together. And there are things like doctor's offices, schools, orthodontist offices, they're well equipped now electronically to handle two parents in different homes. And all it takes is people filling out the paperwork, especially schools. They have, you know, the PTO as well as school enrollment. They'll send electronic communication to everybody. And I do tell parents, you know, make sure you sign up online. Mm-hmm. Don't rely on that other person. Even if when the marriage was intact, if one parent who was the stay-at-home parent maybe handled everything, make sure you're signed up, call the school, make sure you're on board with all of that. And the schools are handling this all the time with these divorce situations.
So let's talk a moment about, and you had touched on this a little earlier, about co-parenting and the court making decisions unless it's a danger to the children. I think there's a lot of parents out there that may feel that some things are a danger that maybe the court would not. However, but let's say my spouse has now started dating and people he's dating engage in drugs or a lot of alcohol or, you know, things that I don't want my children to be around. But we have to co-parent and that influences his co-parenting abilities. How is that handled?
I mean, if it truly is a dangerous situation, even if it's after there's a parenting judgment entered, if it's dangerous, if it's impacting the child's health, emotional or physical health, well-being, obviously you should see your attorney. The appropriate course of action might be to do potentially an emergency petition, obviously get a GAL or a child representative appointed or perhaps reappointed if there was one involved in the case previously. Again, because it's 2019, there are, for example, if alcohol overuse is an issue during a person's parenting time, there is a device called SoberLink that can make sure that can do alcohol testing. That does require a court order in coordination with the alcohol testing company. But if it truly is a danger, that's one thing. What we also see, as Katie can probably attest to too, is some people perhaps even exaggerating what's going on or being overly concerned because of the divorce, because they don't know what's going on in the other person's house. So, you know, we really do as practitioners have to assess, is it something that the lifestyle is very different than the parties live during the marriage, but it's not harming the kids? Because, for example, if people have a three-year-old child and the child's been put to bed and one party is having three or four glasses of wine, but they're perfectly able to function, that's one issue. If it's dangerous to the child, it's a very different issue. And it is oftentimes hard to determine without a lot of, you know, deep conversations with the client exactly what's going on. And obviously, if we're not in the house and none of us are, right, it's impossible to know that for sure.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I think what is considered, you know, we're all parents, so we know that we're very sensitive about what we think our children are exposed to. And what's very personal is very different from what a court looks at. And you have to understand that when you go to court, a judge has hundreds of cases before it. So while it always will err on the side of caution, especially when it deals with children, it has factors that it has to look at. One of the big factors is whether this behavior is happening in front of the children. If somebody, in Karen's example, is drinking while caring for the children, there can be an argument that would be made if that person is so inebriated and the child wakes up sick, how would that person drive the child to the hospital? And that could be a situation that would be worrisome. But the same judge might also say, well, I think that's overreacting. Nothing's happened before, and I don't have a precedent to say anything. You know, the idea that something could happen is not enough for me to change something. I've had situations where I've represented spouses where the other spouse does have an issue with alcohol, and the judges have said to me what they do on their own time when they don't have the children is their business. And that seems very, because you can't really be a half-time alcoholic if you've got an issue with alcohol. But there is somewhat of a limited ability for the courts to address some of those situations that don't directly happen in front of the children. And that's not always the best news for parents, because that's a very frightening concept. Because as we all know, if you have an addiction, that doesn't just happen only on times you don't have your children. That being said, you know, we work with our clients to then come up with something that could make them feel more comfortable. And what Karen referred to is SoberLink. There's also installing a BAID in somebody's vehicle, which is a BAID breathalyzer. It's basically a breathalyzer that's installed in the vehicle that you blow into. And if there is a trace of alcohol at a certain level on your breath, the car won't start. So there are ways that you can address that, you know, random urine screening tests. There's things that can be addressed that can be also done in a very private way that doesn't have to be known to the public. Those are things that ultimately could either come by agreement or have a judge order it. But again, every case is specific. Every case has different scenarios that we have to sit and analyze and say, okay, are those behaviors know, we have to make a couple step analysis. Are those behaviors something that a court is going to find dangerous? If the court might not find dangerous, is there a way that we can then negotiate with the other side, avoid a judge altogether, but still come up with something that everybody feels safe and most importantly, the children are safe? So we've kind of veered out of topic a little bit, but you know, in that kind of situation, there's a lot of remedies, but again, we have to assess it on a case-by-case basis.
What I was going to add too is, you know, just in these bigger picture, really conflicted families, ultimately, sometimes the best solution is some real serious therapy or a therapeutic team to be put in place to help parents learn how to communicate better. Because even if one person, for example, was allocated sole decision-making, let's say they got their wish. And I had this conversation a couple times in the last couple of years with parents. The other person's still going to have parenting time. They're still going to be involved with the child. And so those granular issues that affect the child day to day, you know, their school uniform perhaps, or special clothing or sports equipment or play dates or going to birthday parties, those are things that parents really, and so communication is just so key. And some litigants really need to be reminded of that time after time after time. And for the most conflicted parents, there are some therapists that really specialize and have special communication protocols that they work with parents on. And I have referred some parents to those practitioners to work on that, because some parents literally get to a point where they just can't communicate. And that needs to be front and center as their kids progress throughout their minority.
So some people may be wondering, you know, is that an additional cost that people need to cover, right? Because there's all these professionals that could help. At the same time, I'm sure that all costs money.
Divorce is an expensive process. I mean, there's, you know, it can be an expensive process. I mean, there's, but when you're considering what's at stake, you have to really weigh the expense and then the safety, one, of your children, and then two, the ability to co-parent with another parent is essential, because you're going to be parents of these children for as long as you live. So it's never not a good idea to learn skills on how to co-parent with the other parent as long as they're going to be in that child's life. Because in, you know, in a typical divorce where there's no children, you can divorce and you never have to see that person again. In this kind of situation, as what Karen said, is even if you had sole decision making and made those major decisions, the other parent's still going to be present. There's going to still be a presence of that parent. And children are sponges. And children are, they see if their parents are not getting along and can't co-parent. And they pick up on it. They can use it to their advantage. They can also be profoundly affected by it. And then they take that as their own experience. So going forward, that's how then they also see if their parents are not getting along. That's maybe how they will address things and on a going forward basis.
Yeah, and certainly there is a cost to everything. I mean, a parenting coordinator charges an hourly rate. A GAL or a child representative does as well. Obviously, therapists do. And that's why, yes, it's something that has to be considered. But obviously, to Katie's point, that you're not just parents through the time at which they graduate from high school, you're parents forever. I mean, there's people are going to be, I tell people all the time, you're going to be going to hopefully college graduations or other family events, weddings, christenings, grandchildren. So the more that people can work together on behalf of their kids and lay the groundwork for their children, the better.
Yeah. And just one more point is that, you know, often what I will do is, a parenting coordinator can be a really good resource after a judgment is entered, because the costs can be decreased by not litigating issues. And so if you have a parenting coordinator who can resolve issues for you without going to court, you've drastically decreased the costs that you'd ultimately be spending. I only really use a parenting coordinator during cases that have not yet been settled where it's extremely contentious, because we as attorneys can go into court really at any time and file motions, argue with each other and say, you know, judge, this has to be ordered and this has to be ordered. But that's not in the financial best interest of our clients, because ultimately it's not efficient and no one leaves satisfied. So, you know, rather than having us attorneys battle it out in court, it might make sense to have a parenting coordinator make that final decision to keep those matters out of court. So actually, in reality, it could actually save money.
And just to echo that too, and I think parenting coordinators for those contentious cases post-decree, post the time the judgment is entered, I can't stress that enough. What I like about the parenting coordinator for those high conflict cases is that when you file a motion, absent a real true emergency, the other side's going to get time to respond and the court may choose to set up for status. They might not set up for a hearing for 60 days or more. And in the meantime, if you have a parenting coordinator and it's an issue that needs to be resolved quickly, that's the way to resolve it quickly. And that oftentimes is going to be much better for really the child, children involved, and as well as the parents. Because then this issue is not hanging over everybody looming in the future. It's going to be resolved. And it's a much more, I explained to parents that a parenting coordinator is kind of like a referee. And they're going to make those quick calls and get everybody moving on, as opposed to, you know, judges are absolutely doing their best. But to Katie's point, they have hundreds of cases and they're not going to make immediate decisions because they need to listen to all these different sides. The parenting coordinator can do that in a phone call and they can do it via email. They have met with the children usually at least a couple of times. So it's a much more quick, reflexive, holistic, efficient process for the right type of the case.
Okay. So if I'm convinced by my attorney to co-parent and just understand that this is the way it needs to be, can the co-parenting agreement be changed at a later time if it's not working out?
So if that was allowed as kind of a blanket permission, then I think people would be running into court every time they don't agree with how a decision's being made. So our statutes basically states that within 2 years, if there is actions that are seriously endangering a child, and that's, again, very fact-based. What is serious endangerment? You know, we as attorneys have everything as a it depends type of answer. But serious endangerment would allow for decision-making, co-parenting, you know, joint decision-making, sole decision-making to be changed. Otherwise, tell our clients to be very careful what they agree to, because absent serious endangerment, you won't be able to change the decision-making process until 2 years. And at that point, it becomes a best interest standard. So the standard changes. What's in the best interest of your children? And so it's a little bit of a lesser burden after 2 years, after the decision-making component is addressed. And an important thing to note is during the divorce process, and I'm just focusing on divorce right now, before a final judgment is entered, before an order is entered that dissolves your marriage, you can have a parenting agreement entered. So the 2 years is from the day that you enter the parenting agreement. It's not from the day that you get a divorce. So if a parenting agreement is entered and you don't get divorced for, meaning your marriage isn't dissolved for, you know, a year afterwards, you've already gone through a year with your parenting agreement effect. So it almost operates as its own agreement. Judges want to get the parenting issues out of the way before they want to deal with the financial issues. That's much more important. But you can change it. It's difficult to do so within 2 years, but after the 2 years, the standard is very much less.
And the other thing to keep in mind is every parenting judgment has to have a mediation provision.
Yes.
So before you would, if you are past the 2 year period and you want to change, for example, decision making just on extracurriculars, for example, you'll still have to go through the mediation provision unless it's really unusual circumstances. So again, every sort of effort in the statute is made to sort of get people to agree on their own, because from the judge's perspective and from the perspective of a GAL, we always want to see the two people who chose to have these children be the ones that ultimately make those decisions. That's how the kids are best served most of the time.
Thank you. This has been a wealth of information. Is there any final thing you'd like to share about co-parenting that you think is important, either when they're making an appointment with you or as they're going through the process, you have to keep in mind?
Whether I'm meeting with parents for the first time or a client for the first time, I really do try to get them to focus on the big picture, which is, you know, ultimately the children are going to be best served the two parents that are going to work together. And getting through the case is going to be difficult, and there's going to be disagreements. There's going to be disagreements after the judgment's entered, but most people can do it. And when they can achieve that, the children are definitely best served.
Yeah, and just to echo on one of Karen's earlier points, that there's more commonality than parents think. They think they're all ultimately at odds with the other parent. And there's actually a lot more common ground than they think. And it surprises a lot of people that a lot of those decisions have already been made. And it's a little bit easier to maneuver through the decision-making process than looking at it as a blank slate. Unless you have a brand new child, which I would say most of our clients have children that are not newborns. they've worked together so far to at least make some decisions. So the idea that it's a blank landscape and what we have to do is kind of create from the beginning, it's not as onerous as people think to approach parenting. And that even if they can't get along with the other party, they might be actually really successful co-parents. And so I try to make more of a silver lining than a doomsday scenario. And I think my clients appreciate that, especially given how contentious things can be.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. If you'd like to get in touch with Katie Michelson or Karen Page, feel free to go on to Bierman's website, www.biermanlaw.com. You'll hear from Karen and you'll hear from Katie again on a different divorce topic. If you like what you heard and what you saw, feel free to share this on your social media pages. Please follow us on Facebook, like us on LinkedIn, and please subscribe to this podcast. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Divorce Talk. Visit our website at www.biermanlaw.com, where you can subscribe to the show so you'll never have to miss a single one. Please also follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn and subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating. Be sure to tune in next time for another enlightening episode.